Okay, good morning. I just want to say a double honor this morning, being able to learn with you here this morning. Number one, Midrash Yom Rishon is a program that I admire so much. Women who come out on a Sunday morning to learn Torah, it's inspired me in so many different ways. And it's an absolute honor and pleasure to be able to learn with you this morning. In addition, I noticed that this morning has been sponsored in memory of the beloved Principal Rabbi Fulda of Central Brooklyn High School. And I feel it very appropriate in two levels. Number one, Rabbi Fulda was a very important Rebbe to both my parents. He was Masader Kedushin, and very much an integral part of our chinuch at home. And I hope to conclude today's shiur with something that I learned from Rabbi Fulda through my parents that I think really brings home the topic that we're going to be learning today. And secondly, just being a teacher at Central currently, it's truly very humbling to think of the amazing institution that Central has become because of its students from the past and its mechanchim, who really built this gorgeous foundation. And it's an honor, honestly, to be here standing before you as a teacher of Central High School and to only report that my students and colleagues are the most refined people that you could truly find. And if our girls at Central are indication of what is to come for the future of Am Yisrael, we are all in very good hands. And I think that those foundations could only have been laid by the people that came before us, such as principals like Rabbi Fulda and the students that came before it. And I'm really in awe of being part of such an amazing institution. So real special honor this morning to be able to learn with all of you, and especially with this special sponsorship in memory of Rabbi Fulda. Let's begin. I mentioned to you that I am a teacher at Central. I actually have a very unique, I had a very unique opportunity. I'm the oldest of five, one brother, three sisters, and actually all three sisters went to Central and I was their teacher. So you can only imagine what parent-teacher conferences look like. I actually remember one time my first parent-teacher conferences with my parents. Parents were waiting to meet with me and my parents, their turn came. And my father came over to me and gave me a big kiss on my cheek, and everybody else was like, oh, she's that kind of chumash teacher. In addition, just teaching classes with my sisters was always very interesting. I remember once telling a joke in class and the whole class erupting in laughter, and my sister was sitting there with a straight face. So I didn't say anything at the time, and I actually drove her home later that night, and I said, what's going on? She's like, you know that joke that you said in class? So I was like, yeah. She's like, that was really funny. So I was like, I know, but you didn't laugh. She's like, I couldn't, because it would admit that you're cool. So a lot of therapy later. Baruch Hashem, our sibling relationship has repaired since then. But it made me think a lot about sibling relationships. It's such a beloved relationship, and yet one that oftentimes has this kind of a reputation of being very tense, and probably with good reason. We just concluded yesterday Sefer Bereishit, and it was really an entire Sefer dedicated to the tension that exists between siblings. And as we are anticipating now this coming Shabbat to read from Sefer Shemot, I think it's important for us to reflect back on what exactly Sefer Bereishit taught us about sibling relationships. And as we begin the Sefer HaGeulah, Sefer Shemot, how sibling relationships evolved over that time. And I think perhaps it might give us the key to really understanding in our own lives the role of siblings, and maybe not even biologically, but the conceptual idea of brotherhood. So let us begin reviewing all the way back at the beginning of Sefer Bereishit, our first introduction to siblings. On your source sheets, you'll see that were taken to Bereishit, Perek Dalet, and the story goes that Adam and Chava have been kicked out of Gan Eden, and their lives now are going to be rebuilt in a different way than they know. And the pasuk starts, "V'ha'adam yada et Chava yishto v'tahar v'teleid et Kayin, v'tomer kaniti ish et Hashem." And so Adam and Chava, they have their first child, and Chava, in her excitement, names this child Kayin. And the Torah gives us a reason for his name. Kaniti ish et Hashem. I've acquired this man with God. And there's almost this excitement that her life is not over. Although perhaps she being the one to introduce sin to herself and to Adam into this world, now she sees that Hashem is not fully angry at her, but yet partners with her in bringing life into the world. And there's almost this excitement that she has in naming this child. If we look at Pasuk Bet, fascinatingly, what does it say? V'tosef laledet et achiv. It's like an afterthought. And in addition, she continued to give birth to his brother, right? The concentration being on Cain and the other one being his brother. And what is his name? Et Hevel. And there's no reason here given as we continue to read the Pasuk. Vahi Hevel roe tzon, v'kain uvir adama. Hevel was a shepherd and Cain was a worker of the land, a farmer. No reason for his name Hevel there. We don't see that same excitement that Chava had with Cain. And then it goes into this strange, you know, information that gives us over about their jobs. And we're almost wondering what's going on here. The Pasuk seems to be structured in a very, very strange way. Nechama Leibovitz and others have commented that if you closely read this Pasuk, there's a chiastic structure, right? Chiasm, the A-B-B-A pattern in the Pasuk. And they point out as follows. So what happens in Pasuk Bet is we read about, right, Hevel. Then it tells us about Hevel's profession. And then it goes into Cain again and Cain's profession. If I was a more, right, organized person, I would have preferred that when I was introduced to Cain at the beginning, it should have said, right, Chava called him Cain, give me the reason for his name, and say, and by the way, he was an Oved Ha'adama, that he was a farmer. Yet the Pasuk is clearly introducing us to Cain, taking a commercial break, going over to Hevel, not giving us a reason for his name, or that same excitement that we saw with Chava naming him, telling us the profession of Hevel, and then going back and saying, oh yeah, and Cain was a farmer or a worker of the land. And so one has to ask why the structure of the Pasuk is this way. And perhaps some of the Mefarshim, and I know Nechama Leibovitz talks about this in her works as well, which is that perhaps the Pasuk is zoning in specifically on the profession because this is going to be a crucial piece of understanding who these two men are. Cain is going to be someone who represents the agriculture, the farming, the working of the land, while as Hevel is going to be this person who's going to represent this idea of shepherding, this idea of moving, taking care of living animals. And we're going to see that this is going to be an important theme, and we're going to see how it also plays out in their specific story and in the story of all siblings throughout Sefer Bereishit. So as we continue on in these psukim, let's see how this manifests itself. We don't know much about their personalities. Are they introverts? Are they extroverts? You know, do they like sports? Do they like reading? Like, we don't know so much about them other than just their choice of profession. And as we continue on in the psukim, it says, "Vayhimi ketz yamim, vayavei Kayin pri ha'adama mincha la'Hashem." So Kayin wants to give of his work, right, to Hashem, and so he brings a mincha la'Hashem. And Hevel, very often as times we see the younger brother following suit of the old brother, the Hevel hevi gam hu mibchorot sono, umechav lehem, v'yasha Hashem el Hevel v'el minchato. So Hevel follows suit like his older brother, and he brings of his best of the sheep, and Hashem chooses and accepts Hevel. So you almost feel bad for Cain, right? And it was Cain's idea. This was Cain was the leader here. Cain was the one who brought these tributes to God first. And yet Hevel gets the attention, and we see that it bothers Cain. And as we continue on in the Psukim, V'al Cain V'al Minchato Lo Sha'a, V'yichar LeCain Me'od V'yiplu Panav. Right, you could tell, you almost like you could see his face completely like, or if you're putting like a soundtrack to it, it's like, wah, wah. You know, you're just excited for Cain. He's doing something good. His brother's following suit and it's also good. And yet Hevel's the one who gets all the attention and Cain, right, he gets upset about this whole thing. But not to fear, all of a sudden, Hashem appears to Cain and tries to give him comfort. Vayomer Hashem al Cain, lama chara lach, v'lama naflu panacha? Why are you so upset? Why has your face fallen? Why are you showing signs of being distraught? Halom teitiv seit v'im lo teitiv lefetach atat roveitz v'ala teshukato v'atatim shalbo. God gives him a little bit of a pep talk. You could do better. Don't worry. There's still hope for you. And if you don't do better, then sin might be crouching at your door. But you can handle it. You can get over this, Kayin. And he probably encourages him in a sense of, okay, so this first mincha didn't work out, but it could work out in the future. And we see almost this sense. And many Mefarshim talk about this being a very complicated pasuk, and for another time, it definitely deserves its time to be studied. But for our intense purposes right now, it seems as if Kaina is getting this re-encouragement, like, it's okay, don't worry. Your brother did something good, and you can accept that. And it's okay that I did so, and that you can in the future improve yourself. And then pasuk Chet comes along. How is Kaina going to react to such a statement by Hashem? So we see that it says nothing about Kain's response to Hashem, but Kain takes action. Vayomer Kain el Hevel Achiv. Kain says to Hevel, his brother. Blink. Doesn't say what he says. There's no conversation there. And then the pasuk continues. Vayhi beotom besadeh. And it was when they were in the field. Vayakim Kain el Hevel Achiv. Right, Kain gets on his brother, Hevel, and Vayirhagehu, and he kills him. That conversation is completely missing. What did he say? Hey, Hevel, can I have a word with you? It really wasn't fair that when I was bringing my korban, you brought the korban too, right? It's not fair. I drew a picture for mommy, and it's not fair for you to bring her sculpture, right? It's this sense of, why did you do that? We don't know. Was that the conversation? Was the conversation is, how dare you? How dare you take one of your best sheep and give it over, right? Don't you know I worked hard for the fruit that I gave to Shem? And yet we don't know what the conversation is. And the Midrashim and the Mefarshim love this, right? Anytime there's this ambiguity, now they have time to insert oral traditions or ideas that they would like. And yet we're not given what that conversation was. And again, perhaps being able to go through the many Midrashim and Mefarshim is, well, very, very worthwhile. Perhaps for this morning, what I'd like to suggest is that the question is left open, what was that conversation between two brothers who at first had a bit of tension, a bit of animosity? And what I'd like to suggest as we continue to go on throughout this year, that as we unfold the rest of the stories of sibling relationships in Sefer Bereishit, we'll understand what that conversation might have looked like, or we might understand what the conversation of siblings throughout all of time will continue to look like, and in what ways do we have to prepare ourselves for the tensions that might be embedded in this type of relationship, and how we can, as Hashem tells Kain, be able to overcome it and to be able to rule over it. And so just to show you the way of how the psukim are so gorgeously written here in terms of the textual connections here to brotherhood, right? It then says the word brother, right? Almost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. It's a milamancha, repeating word, again and again and again. So Hashem even fronts Kain. Vayomer Hashem el Kain, Hevel achicha. Right, where is Hevel your brother? Vayomer lo yadati. Hevel says, Kain says, I don't know. Hashomer achi anochi. One of the most famous lines. Perhaps a question that haunts us throughout all of Jewish history. Perhaps, are we our brother's keepers? And we'll come back to that as well. But this idea of brotherhood being mentioned again, Hevel achicha, Hashomer achi anochi, Vayomer maaseh kol dmei achicha, soakim alai min adama. What have you done, Kain? Right, the blood of your brother is screaming from the ground. The ata arur ata, you are cursed, and the ground in which you worked is cursed. Asher patzat pi alakachat et dmei achicha, once again, miadecha, because of the blood you've spilt from your brother, from your own hands. And then Hashem continues to say, ki ta'avoda ta'adama lo tosef teit kocha lach, you've worked the land, but now the land will not provide its produce for you, or you won't be able to benefit from the work in which you once engaged in. What will you do now, Kain? Na v'nad. You will travel and wander from place to place, tia ba'aretz, in the land. Right? And then Kain kind of accepts his punishment with a sense of being overwhelmed. Vayomer Kain el Hashem gadol avoni min hasoa. Whoa, this is a big punishment for me to be able to handle. And so Cain recognizes that no longer would he be that farmer that he once was, but now he would be a wanderer and at the danger of perhaps being killed by those who seek his life. And what's something I think is fascinating to point out here, and going back to why the Pasuk back in Bet made this chiastic structure about their occupations, is that it seems that these two brothers had two very different value systems. Cain had the value system of saying, let's work the land, which is interesting in the context of the earlier Parsha Bereishit, where Adam is cursed and the land is cursed. It almost seems as if Cain wants to, you know, repair that situation that happened to his father earlier. And he's an agricultural man. He's a man who's going to work the land. He's a man who's going to be able to invest himself in the ways in which farmers have to, with a lot of patience and dedication, perhaps a lot of failure. But there's an importance to Cain about working the land. And yet Hevel has a totally different value system. He recognizes that the land is cursed from his father, and he says, maybe it's time for us to think differently. Right? This didn't end well for my parents, and so maybe I'm going to choose another line of profession. I'm going to do shepherding. I'm going to take care of the living. I'm going to care for them. And as a shepherd, you have to move around from place to place, wandering where your flock wander. And it's a different value system of being open to going to places maybe that, you know, you have not settled yourself. As a farmer, you're very settled because you have to work the plot of land in which you have. And maybe already at the beginning of this, we recognize that there is an entirely different approach to life that these two brothers have. And perhaps that's why, if you look at the punishment in which Hashem gives Cain, he says, no longer are you going to be a farmer. You took away the beauty of what your brother valued, and now you're going to fill that void. How, Cain, are you going to fill that void? Navinad, you will wander. Wander just like a shepherd wanders. You took away this special quality of your brother. You killed it. You wanted to get rid of it. You didn't want it in your midst. You're going to live it now. You're going to embrace it, and it's going to be part of who you are. And it's a very interesting concept that Rav Hirsch, if you look at the second source of your sheet, picks up in this as well. He says, a sharp contrast between two brothers will later reveal itself. Yet the Torah says nothing about them except for the difference in their vocations. The implication is that vocational difference suggests differences in character and qualities, differences that will later and will manifest themselves acutely in the history of the nations of the world. We are referring to the contrast between agricultural and pastoral peoples. The root of this contrast can be seen in the pair of brothers who differ in their choice of occupation. And we're going to see that perhaps this model for us at the beginning of Sefer Bereishit is going to follow us throughout all the sibling relationships that we find tension in throughout the Sefer, and perhaps being able to understand exactly what it is it's trying to tell us will be the key to understanding how to move to the next Sefer, Sefer Shmos. As we follow the line of brotherhood throughout Sefer Bereishit, we are then introduced to a few more brothers that maybe give us a little bit of hope. I didn't bring the sources for you here, but in general, we're introduced to Noah's sons, and the brotherhood between Shem, Ham, and Yafet is interesting. We don't find so much tension. We do find that Ham does sin against Noah in whichever way that we interpret it, and that Shem and Yafet come to help the situation. We don't see too much animosity between them. We do see that Noah does curse Ham and says to Ham that he will serve both his brothers, and so there is this perhaps imbalance of power between the brothers. One will supersede the other, and that one will rule over the other. But between themselves, we don't find too much animosity. And then we're introduced to another set of brothers, also three, and these are Avram's brothers. We're introduced at the end of Parshat Noach to Nahor and Haran, and we are introduced to these brothers, perhaps with a sense or maybe a hope that what had happened in the earlier years with Cain and Hevel might be behind us, because we see a sense of real responsibility of brotherhood when Avraham takes Lot into his family. The pasuk in Noah tells us, Vayamat Haran, Haran dies, and through the family trees that are listed in Parshat Noah, we recognize that Lot is left alone, for his father has died, And if we go with Rashi, that Yiska is Sarah, and that maybe we see that Abraham marries Sarai or Sarah at the time, that maybe he's taking responsibility for the children of Haran. And we see that maybe Abraham might be this, saving grace of sibling rivalry. And in source number 3, you really see it in the text, and it comes alive. It says, Vayomer Abraham el Lot. Here there's a rift between Abraham and Lot. And he says, Al natihi meriva beinu beinacha, let us not fight between each other. And what happens is, again, we see that there's a difference of value system. Abraham wants to spread the name of God, and Lot wants to spread his wealth. He wants to go on to Sodom, and he wants to make for himself a name. He wants to make for himself a great wealth. And for some reason, they don't see eye to eye. There is this tension. They seem to not be able to live together anymore. And Abram says it to Lot, let's not fight. Let's not have this tension. And he says, for the reason of why don't we want this tension, right? Why should we have the tension? Uvein ro'ai, uvein ro'echa, between our shepherds. Again, maybe showing that the family's choice of profession will be shepherding. Right, let us not fight between our shepherds. Ki anashim achim anachnu, because we are brothers, right? We have to see past our differences. We have to see that first and foremost, we are brothers. And again, maybe even suggesting to go back to the Cain and Hevel, right? Abraham was employing shepherds to take over the field, and where was Lot's mind? Mind in Sodom. And what was Sodom described to us in the Torah? As a fertile land, as a land that was Ke'eretz Mitzrayim, it was like Egypt, and perhaps had all the opportunity to be able to yield the produce in the world of agriculture that he so desired. And so maybe again, that echo of differences of values, differences of choices in life plays itself out, but maybe with a hope that Avram can make amends of this type of relationship. And he calls him, you're my brother, and I just don't want to fight with you, so, you know, this town ain't big enough for the two of us, we got to separate. They separate, and as we know, the story then continues. Lot gets captured amidst the war that breaks out in the area. And the pasuk tells us in source number 4, Vayishma Avraham ki nishba achiv. He hears that his brother has been captured. That's all Avram has to hear. My brother is in trouble. Vayerek et chanichav. He gets his students ready. Yiladei beito, and the children of his house. Shmona asar u'shlosh meot. 318 men. Vayerdof ardan. He goes and he fights. And he's so successful, he pushes out the enemy all the way to Dan. And so Avram maybe gives us a glimmer of hope about brothers. Perhaps now maybe we could see that what once was didn't have to be. And we hope that this is the way now that the rest of Sefer Bereishit unfolds. But as we know too well, it's not. And the next group of brothers that we're introduced to is the brotherhood of Yitzchak and Yishmael. And although if you really look at it from a pshat perspective, we're not really sure that there's too much tension between these two brothers growing up, but we do recognize the tension based off of the fact that Sarah sees something in Ishmael that she does not find, right, to be appropriate for her son Yitzchak to grow up with. And in source number 5, Vayomer Elokim el Avram, after Sarah is telling Avram, get rid of this woman and her son, right? Hashem comes to Avram, Al yira be'enecha el hanar ve'al masecha, don't see this as a bad thing for this child and for your wife or this woman. Ki kol asher tomer lecha Sarah shma bekola. Everything in which Sarah tells you, listen to her voice. Ki bi Yitzchak yikare lecha Sarah, because it's Yitzchak who's going to be able to move your seed forward. He's going to inherit you. And so Hashem establishes maybe this tension, which is that you can't look at them as equals. Here Yitzchak is going to be the one to take over, listen to Sarah, and yes, banish Yishmael and his mother. Right? But he gives them a little bit of hope. V'gam et ben ha'amalogoy asimenu kizarecha hu. Because he is still your son, I will make him into a great nation, but listen to your wife, Sarah. And what's interesting here is that we see again that these two brothers for some reason can't work together, and that there is something that Sarah picks up in Ishmael that says, that's it, you need to get rid of this, because we have to concentrate on Yitzchak, because Yitzchak is going to be the one to inherit you, Avram. And interestingly to think about that the Pesukim, when mentioning Ishmael and telling us a little bit about his character, it tells us that he's a para adam, he's a wild man, a man of the desert, a man outside there, perhaps in the fields, once again, reminiscent of that idea of being a person of, I don't know if you want to say agriculture, but that definitely of being out there in the world. And with Yitzchak, we don't have too many descriptive phrases about his personality, but by the lack of stories or I guess description itself, we kind of see Yitzchak as more of a passive character. A lot of things are happening to Yitzchak. Yitzchak kind of is just that link in the chain of the Mesorah that his father Abraham started, but we don't really see too much about what it is that makes him unique or makes him different. And perhaps this is also the tension in which also Sarah realizes this kind of value system, this kind of child that Yishmael has become, needs to go elsewhere. And what we need to concentrate on is building our son Yitzchak. And so the tension, again, continues, not horribly, but definitely in a way that we see that brothers can't live together but need to be separated. Again, moving forward into our review of sibling relationships in Sefer Bereishit, source number 6, one of the most famous, we see that there is the tension that builds itself up between Yaakov and Esav. And how are we introduced to this story? Even before they're born, there is tension between them in her womb. Rivka decides she needs to go and she needs to find out what this is all about from Hashem. And Hashem tells her, right, she's told in Nevuah that yes, there's two opposing nations that are inside of you, and ultimately the younger will supersede, will rule over the older. And already, before even they're born, there seems to be this tension that is going to exist with these two brothers. And then the Pasuk tells us about the birth Pasuk of Hey, V'yetzeh HaRishon Admoni. And I just want to point out maybe a play on words that Tanakh is doing here. The first one comes and we always translate it as like a red child, gingy of sorts. But I do think that it's noteworthy to point out that Admoni also comes from the word Adama. And again, maybe reminiscent of that original story of brothers, that Cain is Oved Adama, and we're going to see how Yaakov is described. Perhaps he has more of Hevel in him. Again, already telling us that these two brothers are going to have different values, different choices, different personalities, and it's described in a way of being red and rugged and whatever we're going to see now with the descriptions. But just to point that it's not only Admoni, reddish, but maybe also very earthy or someone who values agriculture like we saw before. Kuloka Deret Sear, he seems to be very mature, fully born with hair. Vaikru Shemo Esav, and they called him Esav. And afterwards, Yatza Achiv, his brother comes out, again, almost similar to that kind of structure that we saw in Bereishit, almost maybe like an afterthought, the first one, and then the second one coming out, his brother, Ve'adoa Chazet Be'ekev, Esav, he's grabbing onto the heel of his brother Esav, Vayikra Shemo Yaakov. And then it tells us Yitzchak was 60, Ben Shishim Shana, Baladet Otam, when they were born to him. And the psukim then go on. How did these boys grow up? Yigdalu hanearim. These boys grow up. Vayhi Esav ish yodea sa'id ish sadeh. A man of the field, a man, the hunter. He's out there. He has certain values and personalities. V'Yaakov ish tam yoshev ohalim. He's simple, wholesome, and he likes studying in the tents. And once again, ohalim, interestingly, is not a permanent structure, a structure that moves around, a structure that could be uplifted and planted in other places. We know from earlier sources that there were such concepts of cities being built. It wasn't that Yaakov was a man of the cities, of a stable structure, but perhaps Yaakov also showing us his wholesomeness. He likes this lifestyle of Ohalim. He likes being in the tents that perhaps also are reminiscent of this moving around factor, maybe something a little bit more similar to the concept of shepherding. And what continues on is as we get to know Esav and Yaakov better, we see that Rivka realizes that Yitzchak has a preference for Esav, and she realizes as well that this is not the way, and that who's going to be the one to take over? It's going to be Yaakov. And so she devises this whole plan, and so At the moment in which he gives over the plan to Yaakov, Yaakov has a concern. Hayomer Yaakov el Rivka imo, Hinesev achi, my brother Esav, ish seir, he's a hairy man. Vanuchi ish chalak. Even physically we look different. Forget that we have different value systems, and even if I can fake it, and even if I can pretend to be like my brother Esav, where we're just even as we look at each other, right? I was going to pick up the way. He's going to feel me, and I'm going to be smooth-skinned, and my brother is a totally different, person physically. He's more of a hairy individual. And so it's interesting here that even not only personality-wise, but even physically, even the idea of looking different than your brother also is a sense of concern here, obviously not to be caught, but an interesting thing for us to think about also in terms of building differences between these two brothers. And as we know, Yitzchak gives over the bracha to Yaakov, and then when Esav confronts Yitzchak, Yitzchak then says to Esav, "Yomer ba achicha b'mirma." Seems as if your brother has come with trickery, vayikach b'chasecha, and has taken your blessing. And so now we're introduced now to brotherhood that not only is something that we've learned from Cain and Hevel with the tragedy of murder and death, but now we see that trickery and tension and being able to hurt one, not physically, but maybe hurt someone through trickery also is introduced to brotherhood. Obviously here, perhaps in good intention and for reasons that Rivka saw through Nevuah and through what was necessary, but definitely builds up tension between brotherhood, between what is our relationship? Are we meant to be, kind of, in a sense, tricking one another? Should I always try to overcome you? And we see that this type of, this type of brotherhood now continues to develop throughout Sefer Bereishit. Just to point out in the next source as well, I just think it's interesting. I haven't seen so much written about it, but it is interesting to see that when Esav wants to kill Yaakov, he still refers to him as Achi. V'harga et Yaakov Achi. He doesn't just say, "I'm going to kill Yaakov. I'm going to kill Yaakov, my brother." There's something there. There seems to be a bond there, and the hurt that maybe he feels is not just that a fast one on him, or that somebody did in fact take away something that he thought was his, but rather it's his brother. And because he wants to kill Yaakov, it's not enough in the pasuk to just say that he's after Yaakov, but he's after Yaakov Achi, his brother. And so the tension builds itself also by Esau wanting to get rid of this brother who he now feels hurt by, and as we know, the story then continues. Obviously, it would be wonderful to be able to go through all the various different elements and dynamics of sibling rivalry. Obviously, we're limited for time, and so this is kind of just a little bit of a smorgasbord of just reviewing and tasting different parts of it. But I'd like to also shift focus, just as we continue to go through our review and overview of Sefer Bereishit and sibling rivalry, to that of rivalry between sisters. That it's not just brothers in Sefer Bereishit that also have this tension between themselves, but rather that we see that sisters themselves also have a unique situation that ultimately results in a form of tension. Now, according to the Pshat, we're going to concentrate first, and then later, please God, be able to see a little bit more of the Midrashic interpretations of this story. But we see that a very painful story of sisters. We know that Yaakov falls madly in love with Rachel and wants to marry her. And we know that Leah, the older sister, is not described to us as beautiful as Rachel. Perhaps she has soft eyes, but we know that Yaakov's heart belongs to Rachel. And as we know, Lavan tricks Yaakov and replaces Leah and Rachel. And as I said, we'll concentrate on the beautiful midrashim that are written about this episode. But according to the Pshat, I just want to build a little bit of what the rivalry and the tension truly manifests itself between these two sisters. So as we know, Leah is now married to Yaakov, and Leah wants that love from Yaakov, and yet Yaakov's love is constantly running after Rachel. In an unfortunate turn of events, we know that Rachel is also barren and can't provide children for Yaakov, and so she's constantly running to trying to have children. And what ultimately creates itself is this love triangle, where I personally, every time we come to these parshiot or just when we read the stories, it's so painful. And it's almost like this triangle that you just want to break. But I guess every year that we come back to it, more of it gets built up, and something that I find to be really a tragic triangle here. So the Pesukim say, "Vayar Hashem kisuna Leah v'yiftachat rachma v'rachel akara." Right? Leah is not loved by Yaakov in the same way, but she's able to have children, and Rachel, unfortunately, is barren. Now, this whole episode really almost can make you cry. Leah names her children with the intention of being able to hopefully grab the love of her husband. So what does she name the first child? Reuven. Ki amra ki ra'a Hashem ba'ani ay ki ata havani ishi. Right? Hashem has seen me in my pain, and now maybe what will happen, my husband will finally love me. Reuven's name, his essence, is about this love that Leah so wants from her husband. The next son that she has, right? She gives birth and she names him Shimon. Why? Ki shama Hashem ki sanua anochi. Hashem has heard that I am hated. Vayiteni gamze. But still, he gives me another child, and so this child is named also with this pain of knowing that her husband doesn't love her as much, and knowing that Hashem has heard this reality. V'tahar od, and she gives birth to another child, and this third child, she says, Atah hapam yilaveh ishi. Now this time, my husband will be attached to me. Kildati lo shlosha banim, because I have given birth to three sons. Right, and we know that now this is a binding kind of relationship, and my husband can't just abandon me. And so this idea of naming her son Levi also comes from this pain of wanting her husband to love her. And as the psukim continue, we see what's going on the opposite side of Rachel, her sister. V'tere Rachel ki lo yaldal Yaakov. Rachel notices again with this growing family on her sister's side. And what does the pasuk say? V'tikane Rachel ba'achota. She is jealous of her sister. V'tomar al Yaakov, and she says to Yaakov, Havali banim v'im ayin meita anochi. Give me children, otherwise I should die. And you see the pain of Rachel wanting these children and yet not being able to get it. So it can go on. Yaakov gets angry at Rachel. V'yomer atachat elokim anochi. Am I in place of God? All right. Asher manami mecha pribetan. Am I the one to prevent your womb from having children? V'tomer hineim ati bilha. Rachel says, okay, I'm taking matters into my own hand. Take this woman, Bilha. Let her be a wife to you, and I will build up from her. And it works. Bilha gets pregnant. She has a child. And how does Rachel name that child? Danini elokim v'gam shama bikoli. God has judged me, and so he has heard my voice. V'itein li ben, he has given me a son. Al kein karashimo dan. And Bilha continues to have another child. And in this child, what does she name? Naftulei elokim. Right? Naftali imachoti. Gam micholti v'tikrashimo naftali. Right? I've waged a competition with my sister, and I have won. And I have come out of this and this seemingly back and forth tension that she builds in her mind with her sister. She names that child Naftali. And then Leah sees that she can't give birth to any more, and so she gives another woman to Yaakov. And the story continues to unfold, this building tension of wanting one thing that the other one has and trying to make sense of it all in this very painful episode of building that I think is somewhat seen as we continue on in Sefer Bereishit. As we know also well, that this tension kind of plants seeds for the future and the children in which Rachel and Leah give birth to. And as we know the stories of Yosef and his brothers, this seems to be something that has a very strong history and manifests itself. And it only gets worse as we continue on in source number 12. When Yosef grows up, he's already a little bit hated and already seen as different, perhaps because he is a child of Rachel and not part of the crew of Leah. But he then is a dreamer. And it seems that Yosef has a different personality than the rest of the brothers. Vayichalom Yosef chalom, and he has these dreams. And just for the sake of time, I'll just go through some of the bolded parts of it and just highlight some of the psukim here. What is he dreaming about, Yosef? His first dream, it says, that he is bitoch hasadeh, that he is in the fields. V'hine kama alumatai v'gam nitzava v'hine tisbena alumosecha v'teshachavena l'amulati. What happens? They are in an agricultural environment. They are gathering the sheaves of wheat, and Yosef's wheat is in the middle, and it's bowing down to them. And the Rav, which we'll read in just a moment from his book, Vision and Leadership, recognizes it's not so much that the brothers are jealous of Yosef because his dreams are planting himself in the center and all of them looking at him and saying, oh, you think you're better than us. It's that Yosef is even talking about things that are not part of the family value system. What are the brothers? The brothers are shepherds. The brothers are there in the land of Shechem, shepherding for Yaakov and for the family. Comes this brother who's already a little different, who's already getting extra attention. And what does he do? He dreams of agriculture. He dreams of a place like Mitzrayim, a place that he can build his occupation different than his brothers. And his brothers don't like it. They don't see that this is something of value, and they say, this boy has very strange views. He's a little out of the box than we are. Let's keep this in mind. And as Yosef continues to dream, and he dreams about stars and heavens and moons, right? Even Yaakov himself says, Yosef, slow down a little bit here. I'm not sure exactly what you're trying to tell me. I'm not really sure what you're exactly trying to get out here, right? And even Yaakov holds these words close to himself, but also doesn't really fully understand these dreams that Yosef is trying to give over. And it builds more animosity and more tension between the brothers. Source 13, Vision and Leadership. Rav Soloveitchik, it's really such a gorgeous book and such a amazing read, highly recommended. I'm really just taking certain pieces out, and he talks about this tension, but he says this in the opening of his book, which I just think is worthwhile reading in his own words. He says, in my opinion, the basic mistake to the brother was not jealousy. Rather, it was the lack of appreciation of one of the most precious gifts that the Almighty has granted humans, the sense of unity that members of a family feel for each other, manifold ontological experiences that express itself in love and devotion. They did not appreciate each other. They did not bestow love and devotion upon each other. They were hostile to each other. There was a treasure within reach, and they did not appreciate the treasure. It was more of the lack of appreciation for who the other one was that was really at the core of the tension of Yosef and his brothers, more so than jealousy, more so than looking at Yosef as perhaps this annoying little brother who says, I'm greater than all of you. It was a lack of realizing Yosef is different. He does think out of the box. He's not like us. We're shepherds and he's dreaming of agriculture. But the lack of appreciation of what that really meant and what that truly is, perhaps is what's at the core of it all. And then we get to the end of the Sefer. And at the end of the Sefer, it seems to take this tremendous turn. Things cannot possibly maybe get worse for us. The brothers sell Yosef. Yosef goes down to Mitzrayim. And we know that there is a broken family as a result of this type of feelings for brothers. And yet, we get a little bit of hope at the end of the Sefer. And the little bit of hope comes from the children of Yosef, of Menashe and Ephraim, who in a way get set up just like their father and just like their uncles and just like their great-grandparents and great-grandparents, and they choose a different route. They choose something a little bit different. And again, just for the sake of time, we don't know much about the personalities of Menashe and Ephraim, but at least we could look at the psukim of why they were named, what they were named, and maybe get a sense. So here we are in source number 14, and it says, Vayikra Yosef et Shem HaBechor Menashe. The first son is called Menashe. Why? Shani Elokim et kol amali ve'et kol beit avi. God has let me forget all my pain of my father's house, right? And I'm able to just forget the past. This bayit, this house in which, you know, kind of went against me, sabotaged me. The pain in which I still feel from it, I'm forgetting about it, and this new son is going to represent that piece of my life and will grow up in such values. And then right after, when Ephraim is born, why is Ephraim called Ephraim? Ki kara Ephraim hafrani Elokim be'eretz aniyai. Because God has made me successful and fertile in the land of my affliction. And again, looking at these two values, you see the conflict of Yosef. He wants to forget his past, and yet he names his second son Ephraim with hope for the future and recognition of the success ba'aretz in the land in which he is afflicted by, but he yet sees that maybe perhaps some of his dreams that he had are now coming to fruition, and that this son represents a new dawn, perhaps a new and more promising future. And so these two boys grow up in the same house, a father who's conflicted about his past and yet feels so promised about his future. And again, going through some of the Mefarshim, we might get little glimpses of the personalities of Menashe and Ephraim. Rashi comments that this boy in which Yosef sends to plant the cup in Binyamin's sack, and the interpreter of the brothers to Yosef is Menashe himself, and so we might think that Menashe is an extrovert, someone who's out there, and Ephraim we don't hear so much about, and he's that introvert. At the end of the day, what we see, though, is these two brothers that can be very different, can have different values, and still are living in the same house. And at the end, what we just read yesterday, at the end of Sefer Bereishit, Parsha Vayechi, that we read yesterday, what does it say? The same scenario presents itself once again. And again, not going to read through the entire source, but Vayar Yisrael b'nei Yosef, Ayomer Miela. So Yaakov says, who are these boys? To Yosef, and Yosef said, these are my sons who were born to me, that Hashem gave me in Mitzrayim. And so Yaakov brings them close, Vayashak lahem, Vayachabek lahem, he kisses them, he hugs them. And so what does he say? He says to Yosef, I'm going to give you a bracha and them a bracha. And then I think this is an interesting when he gives the bracha. What does he say? Vayvarich et Yosef. So as he's standing, the two boys, he makes the switch, right? He puts his hand on the right hand on the younger one, and Ephraim, and the left hand on the older one, Menashe. And basically Yaakov replicates once again the same story over and over again, and you almost want to smack yourself and say, oh my God, like, hello, did we not learn the lesson of all of Sefer Bereishit? Why are we putting ourselves in the same scenario once again? Don't we see that from Cain and Hevel, Yitzchak and Ishmael, Yaakov and Esav, the brothers and Yosef, like, it's enough. How many times could we be in the same scenario where we're going to have two brothers that are different, to have different value systems and have different personalities and are younger and older, and just let's just make peace already, and that we're still here and we're almost holding our breaths as we're listening to these psukim in Parsha Vayechi. What will be? Will Ephraim come over Menashe, Menashe come over with jealousy and want to take care of and get rid of Ephraim? And we're holding our breaths. And what ends up happening? Yaakov gives the bracha, Vayvarich Yosef, Vayomer ha'alokim asher yitalchu avotai lefanav, the God in which, who has come with me and your fathers, Avram Yitzchak, right? Haro'eh oti, my shepherd, right? Yaakov says to Yosef, the shepherd, my God, right? He's the one who has walked me me'odi ad hayom hazeh until this day. Perhaps again, a little subtle hint into a certain value system in which Yaakov, the brothers and others had. And knowing Yosef's accomplishment as an agricultural master who saved a country from starvation in a time of need, right, slips that in there, that God is my shepherd, once again. And yet, he then says to the boys, Hamalach ha-goel oti mikol ra, yivarech et ha-ne'arim v'karem behem shemi, b'shem avosai, Avraham v'yitzchak, v'yitzgu larov bekerev ha-aretz. Right, they should be blessed, and they should be multiplied like fish in the land. A very interesting bracha, but yet he's given this bracha to his grandchildren, who he has taken as his own. And there's seemingly this sense of fear, what will happen between these two. But this bracha perhaps comes at a point where Menashe and Ephraim could look at each other and say, it's okay. Ephraim, it's okay that you're different than I am, that your name represents something that Abba values in the future of his own life, maybe in the agricultural success of the land in which he was sent to. And Menashe is accepting Ephraim, who looks at Menashe and says, Menashe, you're okay, because you represent that past, that hurt that our father felt, and in some way we can find common ground. We don't have to follow the same path as our father and our uncles and our grandparents and our great-grandparents. We can make a change. We can accept, we can work together, and we could look at each other and appreciate one another. Elie Wiesel, in his book Night, has a, unfortunately, such a powerful quote where he says, we are all brothers, and we are all suffering the same fate. The same smoke floats over all our heads. Help one another. It's the only way to survive. And I think that Ephraim and Menashe, who represent these children who were born in Galut, who were born in Egypt, they weren't part of this family in Canaan. They looked at each other and they said, it's not worth it. We have to help one another. We're going to experience the same fate. It's worth it to help and work together, because it's the only way to survive Galut. It's the only way to survive this. And if we want to get out of this, we have to make those differences. We have to make those changes. I'm just going to skip 17. I'm going to come to it at the end. But I just want to look At one more piece that I think is really important, because although we see this reconciliation between brothers, biological brothers, I think that as we transition from Sefer Bereishit to Sefer Shemot, the Sefer HaGeulah, I think what we're going to find is that it's not just a repair of brotherhood of biological brothers, but a repair of brotherhood in the conceptual idea that we, Am Yisrael, are brothers. And what's interesting is that when we turn to the first chapters of Sefer Shemot, we're introduced to siblings once again. And perhaps that gives us a little bit of anxiety. How will this Sefer unfold itself when it comes down to brotherhood? And yet these brothers and siblings, really brother and sisters, they come together and they work in the most harmonious and beautiful of ways. Moshe, Aaron, Miriam, siblings once again, and they come and they are the ones who are the movers and the shakers of the Geula. And instead of hating one another, instead of feeling intimidated by one another or threatened by one another, or because their value systems might be different, they're able to look past that all. And in Sefer Shemot, Perek Dalet, we see that when Hashem approaches Moshe and he says, go to the people, Moshe is hesitant. And the Farshim there tell us it's because he doesn't want to step on the toes of his older brother Aaron. Vayicharaf Hashem b'Moshe. Hashem gets angry at Moshe. Vayomer halo Aaron achicha halevi yadati ki daber yidaberhu. Right? Aaron, he knows that I'm speaking to you. Vegam hinehu yotze lekrasacha. He's already on his way to go greet you. V'racha and to see you. V'samach b'libo. And he is happy in his heart. And you have no reason to feel that what happened in your history of brotherhood has to be the reality of what the future of brotherhood has to look like. And so he tells Moshe, he says to him, don't worry, your brother is happy for you. And for the first time we see Aaron and Moshe, different, very different. As we continue to study Sefer Shemot, we'll see their personalities come out more and more. We have Moshe Rabbeinu, the man of Torah, of justice, of truth, of being able to stand in the face of adversity, right? Brothers with a man like Aaron, who's Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom, and when it comes down to it, is a man of the people and a man of making peace. And even to critique him just a slight bit, even in the sense of adversity, sometimes he comes to a place where he feels that chesed and compassion is more important, and we see his role in Chayte Egel that way. And yet Moshe is able to appreciate all of that in Aaron, and even to critique back, right? Aaron, who builds this dynasty of Kahuna, right, is able to look at Moshe, whose own family is not made into a dynasty, but still appreciate everything that Moshe stands for. And these two brothers seem to say, our differences don't matter. When we work together, that's the best thing that we could do for Am Yisrael. But again, I just said to you that I was going to show you how this Sefer shows it's not just biological brotherhood, right? It's more of the brotherhood of the nation. And I just said, Moshe and Aaron, but they are biological brothers. So where do we see this conceptual idea of brotherhood, right, really move from Sefer Bereishit to Sefer Shemot in a way that is promising? And it comes at the night of the Geula. It comes at the night of the redemption. Everyone is doing their Seder, and what is Moshe doing? The source number 19, Vayikach Moshe at Atzmos Yosef Imo. Yet Moshe goes and he gets the bones of Yosef, right, as they had promised Yosef that they would bring them up from Mitzrayim to be buried in the land of Israel. And if you think about it, here is a man who's from Shevet Levi, from the house of Leah. And who should be maybe the ones to think at the night of the Seder, the night they're about to go into Geula, the night they're about to go into redemption, who's going to be the one looking for the bones of their great-great-grandfather? The Shvatim of Yosef, Ephraim and Manasseh, right? Let's go. We made our grandfather a promise. Let's go get his bones. Who's busying himself the night of the Geula? He's the main role of the show. He's got to get everybody out. And instead of getting attendance ready and ready to move everyone forward, he's busying himself saying, no, I need to make a commitment to my brother from Shevet Yosef. And Yosef, we promised Yosef that his bones would be taken. We're going. And that's what I'm doing the night of the Geula. Moshe goes and he tries to find the bones and he brings it with him as they leave Mitzrayim. So much so that it's fascinating. The commentaries say that when they were selling Yosef and they were thinking about what to do when he was coming, source number 20, the phrase, Vayumru ish al achiv, hine ba'al halamos halazeba. When that phrase, Ish al achiv, man to his brother, said, oh look, dreamer boy is coming here. What should we do with him? Let's kill him. Let's get rid of him. He's a troublemaker. He's planting these weird ideas into our minds. What does he say? What do the Mefarshim say? Who were this Ish al achiv? Which brother speaking to which brother? So I'm just going to read Vision and Leadership over here. According to tradition, Levi and Shimon were the two who conspired against him, i.e. Yosef, to slay him. Levi was convinced that Yosef was a menace to the house of Jacob. He was so critical of Joseph that he thought the only way to save Knesset Yisrael was to kill him. So it was Levi. Levi was the one who said, I can't deal with this guy. This guy's going to destroy everything that our forefathers built. Get rid of him. Get him out of here. His ideas are dangerous. His ideas are problematic. We need to get rid of him. Says the Rav, Levi must have changed his mind about Yosef. Instead of hating him, he revised his view. The last years of his life, because he realized who Yosef really was. Apparently, Levi, like the rest of his brothers, reappraised Yosef's personality, and in the course of the years they spent in Egypt, they discovered the beauty, the saintliness, and the greatness of Yosef's personality. And it was Moshe, their great-grandson, right, or Levi's great-great-grandson, who said, enough is enough. We could look at each other with our differences, we could look at each other with our different value systems, and yet we can embrace each other. And that was being done the night of the Geula. That was being done as the Bnei Israel were about to transition from a place of a family that was broken, that was hurt by sibling rivalry, into a new dawn, into a ability to look at brothers and say, we are going to be there for each other regardless. We're going to embrace Yosef's coat of many colors, the idea that we are a colorful nation, that we're different, our value systems might be different. There might be agricultural farmers amongst us, shepherds in our midst, call them in the modern terms as you will, learners and earners, doctors and lawyers, whatever it is that we want to paint the picture as, those who are more religious, those who are not religious, those who believe in the political moves of the nation before the spiritual values and moves of the nation. Paint the picture any way you will. We have all the titles, we have all the things to call everybody and everybody, but are we willing to look at each other and say, I can find your beauty, I can find your saintliness, I can find your personality, and be able to say that it's not me, it's not what I value, but I embrace it and I love it because you are my brother and that we know we're here for the same goal. And to conclude, I just want to talk about three interesting stories. Number one, there's a very famous midrash many of you might have heard. I know growing up I heard it, and in doing preparation for this year, I wanted to find it. It's a story of why the Beit HaMikdash is built in the plot that it is. And the legend has it that there were two brothers who worked the field. They were farmers, again, interesting connection after doing some of this research. And they were planting wheat, and they were harvesting the wheat. One brother was married and had a beautiful family, and the other brother was single and had no family. And as they were ingathering all the wheat of their farm or their field, the brother who was married and with kids said, I feel bad. I have this beautiful family who will take care of me one day when I'm old and I need help, but my brother, he has nobody. So let me take a few of my wheat and let me bring it into his storage house. So this way he'll have extra, and he won't know, but he'll be well taken care of. And at the same moment, the brother who had no family said, I have so much, I don't need all this. My brother, he has a whole family to feed and so much responsibilities and stress. I'm going to take my wheat, and I'm going to put it in his storage house. And they kept doing this night after night, and they were both very curious why their amount of wheat didn't go lower and lower, but rather was just getting higher and higher. And eventually one night they were going to put wheat into the other one's storage house, and they met each other in the way. They saw what they were doing, they embraced, and this great light came over Yerushalayim, came over this makom, and that was a place in which Hashem said, that's where my Beit HaMikdash is going to be built. A gorgeous, beautiful story. Sorry, I guess Christmas is coming up here, so Santa Claus doesn't really exist, so I'm sorry to be the one to bring this news. This story seemingly does not have any written text. It's not found in Midrashim, not found in any rabbinic literature, but maybe in its purest form, this story is true Torah Shebaal Peh. I don't know where it comes from. Rabbi Dr. Ari Zivotofsky has a whole article about this on OU Torah. You're welcome to read it. But he mentions that it's not found anywhere, and yet it is so true. And to borrow a phrase, just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it's not true. And I think that this story so represents what brotherhood has to be. It's the sense of you have something that I don't have, and we can have differences, and we can have different ideals and values, and yet we can meet each other in a way, giving to each other in a way. And I can't imagine that even if it's not an actual source in the Gemara or in a Midrash somewhere, I can only imagine that Hashem hears this story being told as an oral tradition and smiles and says, yes, exactly. You want to know where our Beit HaMikdash can be rebuilt? It can only be rebuilt in a place where brother could see brother with really a sense of understanding. And I know that we're very pressed for time, but I'll just refer back to source 17. We won't do it inside. But this is the famous source in the Midrash that talks about that when Bnei Israel were going into Galut after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the first one, right? Everyone is crying to Hashem and saying, how can you do this? Hashem, have rachmanos, and Hashem is not listening. He's upset. He says, my Bnei Israel, they went to other gods. They abandoned me. I'm not going to sit around here and let that happen. And then Rachel comes to Hashem. And what does she say to Hashem? Right? She says, Ribono Shalom. She's like, I knew the night of my wedding with my passionate love for my husband that my father was switching my sister for me. And I had a choice. I could foil the plan, or I could go along with it because I didn't want to embarrass her. And not only that, she goes on to say that she went under the bed that night of the wedding. And as Yaakov called to who he thought was Rachel, she would answer so that he wouldn't recognize Leah's voice. And she said, I, who had this situation where I was able to see past what I wanted over what I felt my sister needed, I was able to do so with so much mercy and with so much compassion. And you, Hashem, you're going to have more jealousy to Bnei Israel who are going to go and who are going to serve other gods. Have compassion. And what does it say? Rachamav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? The mercy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu came around. B'shvileich Rachel. Ani machzir et Yisrael limkoman. Because of you, Rachel, I am going to bring Bnei Israel back. And so we know, as the Pesukim say, v'yish tekvah l'achariseich noem v'shavu v'alunim l'gvulam, Rachel mevakal, banah, all those Pesukim, the Midrashim say, are because of this act of being able to look past our sibling rivalry, past ourselves, and into our brothers. And to just conclude with the story of Rafulda, something that I've grown up with in my home, and I think that really wraps up this message so beautifully, understanding a giant of a mechanich who has influenced my parents and myself in a very profound way, told my parents a story, and my parents related to me that one time on a trip that Rav Fulda was in Eretz Yisrael, he was taking the bus. And he was sitting there, and I guess Rav Fulda was wearing a black hat and a black coat, and he looked Haredi. And in walked a chayal into the bus, and there was an open seat next to him, and the chayal wouldn't sit. And so Rav Fulda says, why don't you sit down next to me? And it looked like the chayal was very uncomfortable. He says, no, Rabbi, you're a holy person. I'm not such a holy person. I can't sit next to somebody like you. And Rav Fulda said, you are much holier than me. You give up of your lives every single day to protect Am Yisrael. You save Medinat Yisrael. You save Jews around the world. I should be standing for you. You should be sitting in my seat. And he says, you are far greater than I am. And the chayal felt a little bit better and sat down next to Rav Fulda. Seems like a simple story, but so profound. How many of us are able to look at Jews around the world who choose different lifestyles? Those who decide to stand up for Am Yisrael, those who decide to learn for Am Yisrael, those who decide to support Am Yisrael, those whose views are, in our opinion, not the way the tradition should be going, those who are in views of ways of saying, nah, their ways are old and they're not staying with the times. How many excuses can we give one another to say, this is not right, this isn't right? How many of us in our personal families could look at our siblings and say, ugh, why does my sibling have it so easy when it comes down to this? Or why is it that this has to happen that way for this one, but not for me? Instead of asking all these questions, let's look at one another and say, you have something that I don't have, and I want to embrace it, and I want to think about it, and I don't have to make it myself, but I have to celebrate it. And the idea of being able to look at somebody and say, sit down next to me because yes, you are holier than me. You dedicate your life in a way that I have not, is such a beautiful and profound message. And I think that as we look to Sefer Shemos, and we look to Sefer HaGeulah, And we look at brothers, sisters, siblings who look at each other and say to one another, you are holier than me, and let's work together to bring Kedushas Am Yisrael back together. So as we sing that song and that beautiful phrase, Acheinu Kol Beis Yisrael, there's a beautiful way of addressing Hashem in that song. We say that Acheinu Kol Beis Yisrael, wherever they are, whatever situation they find themselves in, we say the following, Hamakom Yirachim Aleihem. We use the name Hamakom for Hashem in that song, in that idea. Why? Because Hamako means the place. Every one of our brothers and sisters, Acheinu Kol Beis Yisrael, have a place. They have a place in Am Yisrael. And we look to Yosef's Ketonet Pasim. We look at our nation, many colors, many stripes, many shapes, many sizes. And we look at it and we say, Hamako Mirachim Aleihem, if Hashem, the place, right, can have mercy on you, we can have mercy on each other. And as we look to see for Shemot of the Geula, let's take and internalize these lessons. Let us strengthen our sibling relations, both biological and conceptual, and let's be able to enjoy what the Geula has to offer in terms of peace and love for all brothers. And to just quote best Psukim of Tehillim, right? Hine matovu manayim sheves achim gam yachad. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.